You've got to make people hungry. You've got to make them want to earn it. It has to mean something. That has to mean something. That badge that you're playing for has to mean something. It's one of my regrets was that Palace never saw me at my best. After Norwich, when everyone left, they took me to their hearts. They never, ever saw the best of me. Because I didn't realise that at 26 years old, I was finished. Mm-hmm. I need half a new knee now. And when at that time they took me to their hearts, I was playing for this, I was playing for them. Because we had that connection and this meant something to me. So when it means something to you, you become passionate about it. Like I'm still passionate about it now.
Hello and welcome to Pod 6 of the Official Palace Pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube and the Official Palace app. This week it's a special pod as we hear from a Palace cult hero, Dean Austin. I interviewed Dean back in April 2017 in the Sala restaurant in Chigwell. As you probably heard from the intro, he is a very passionate man, and this is over an hour of conversation that we unfortunately had to cut down to a 10-minute video. There were so many good stories that were cut out, so here is a chance to hear it all. Dean joined the club from Spurs in 1998 and went on to captain the team through administration, even waiving appearance fees when the club were in trouble. But he wasn't always a favourite with the fans, which is something he speaks honestly about. The story about Neil Ruddock's shorts is a good one, and time has proven him correct in his prediction of what position Wolf Zaha will eventually play. And just one thing to note, when he says, "I played for this," he's tapping his chest and referring to the Palace badge.
Right, let's start at the very beginning. How did just quickly tell me the journey to get to Spurs.
Journey to get to Spurs, well, I was a sort of second year scholar at Watford, which was where my younger career was. I had little spells at Luton and Arsenal and different clubs. Got released from Watford, played for St Albans at the time, was in the Ryman Premier League. I was there for 18 months, I got sold to Southend. And I went to Southend and we got consecutive promotions. The old League Four, so League Four, League Three, up into the Championship that's now. 1 year in that and 22 months after. And I moved to Spurs.
Is it Terry Venables that took you there, Spurs?
Terry Venables signed me for Spurs, yep, in 1992, yeah.
And what was he like as a coach?
I'd say it now. As a player and as a coach, as what I am now, he's probably had the biggest influence on my career as a player and as a coach.
Why was that? A lot of players say that, don't they?
He was a great man manager. He was a fantastic coach, had great ideas, very open-minded, wasn't a dictator. He had a way of making people feel great about themselves.
And how do you look back on your time at Spurs?
First year was unbelievable. Couldn't have gone any better. I think I played 35 games in the first year. Missed the back end, the last month of the season. I had a hernia. But the first year couldn't have gone any better. I was absolutely flying. The second year, Ozzy Ardiles come in and Ozzy had his own ideas. I broke my leg after about 10 games. I was still playing, but I broke my game after about 10 games. And then he signed another right back, David Kerslake. And I was in and out of the team when I come back, still after Christmas, but I come back. I was only out for 12 weeks, come back and I was in and out of the team. And then the following year, I never started the season. I was going to leave. And he then got the sack and Jerry Francis come in about the November and I got straight in the team and I played all the way through and we had a great team and we got the semi-finals of the FA Cup and then we lost the semi-final to Everton but we had three or four players that were injured and played injured and we didn't do ourselves justice on the day. But the first and the third years I was there were as good as years as in my ability to play were the best years of my life. At the end of that third year, I tore a meniscus in my knee in the last sort of 3 weeks of the season. which then I ended up having 4 operations, I think, in about 12 months, and my career was over. I didn't realise it at the time, and no one told me at the time, but, you know, it was the thing that killed me. I was never the same after that. It was over, but I didn't realise it, and I managed myself. I learned about my body, got back at Spurs, got playing again, but on and off, and playing with injuries, and then I got to move to Crystal Palace, which nearly didn't happen because I couldn't pass the medical. Steve Coppell was the director of football. Mark Goldberg obviously was there, but I didn't pass the medical, so I had to sign a waiver. I had to play so many games in the first year to get my second year. But I was lucky. I worked for 3 great managers at Crystal Palace, who managed me, and they physically managed me. So Terry, Steve, and Steve Bruce were phenomenal managers, like up there with 3 of the best managers that I played for. Well, probably the 3 best managers that I played for. I put Jerry Francis in that as well. But those 3 helped me manage my body. So from 28 until I packed up when I was 33, and I only left Crystal Palace 6-7 months before I actually retired. But those 3 guys helped manage my and they were honest, and they helped me. And, you know, for example, when Steve was in charge, Steve would go, right, okay, you know, Skip, you do what you need to do, blah, 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 you know, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, and that was fine. And then when Steve left, you know, I had a year under Alan Smith where I kind of bluffed my way around it for a bit. And then Steve Bruce come in, and, you know, I had opportunities to leave at that point, and Steve went, you're massive for me in the dressing room, you're a major influence on this team. But he was completely honest with me. He said to me, you're not going to be able to play 2 games a week, you know that. When you play on a Saturday, you probably won't play on a Tuesday. When you've played on a Saturday, take Mondays off, come in and train. But this is when I got into coaching. So I was already started the coaching process at 28, 29. I never wanted to be a coach. And then inside 6 months, Terry Venables, Steve Coppell, both put the same sheet of paper in front of me on the same course, telling me to get on this. I had to get on this course because this is what I was going to be. And then when that evolved, I went on the course and what have you. And then Steve Bruce come in, and then Steve said to me, like, you can help Terry Bullivant set up in the morning, kettle balls in, do a bit of coaching, not coach, but watch. And Terry Bullivant helped me, like, regards to that, taught me the ropes in regards to how to deal with people and this, that and the other. And that really evolved from that. So, you know, as I say, my first year and my third year at Spurs were the best years, as in regards to my career. At the level that I got to. But then I'd say probably my years at Southend were great years, great camaraderie, great dressing room. The first year at Tottenham was unbelievable. The dressing room was phenomenal. But then probably more fondly at the back end of my career, from probably 99, 2000 to 2002, the dressing room that we had at Crystal Palace was probably as good as a time as I've had in my life, as in being happy.
Yeah. So going back to when you first joined Palace, it's slightly different dressing room, obviously, to when it became a lot of star names. How was the club sold to you by Terry? Because it was a bit different when Mark Goldberg had just come in.
Was it sold to me by Terry? Terry had sort of spoke to me and said, look, I would like you to sign. There's a good chance I'm going to go to Palace. I would like you to sign. So I'll never forget it. It was the meeting I had with Mark Goldberg and Steve Coppell was in London, and it was the first day of the World Cup in 1998. And I come in and I had it and basically sat there with my agent and had a conversation with Mark, and it was Mark who was the one who sold it. Steve was his normal enthusiastic self, sitting on the other side of the table. Basically asking me loads of questions about my injuries and my knee and this, that and the other. But Mark was the one who sold it to me, really. And that was the discussion. And then it was about making the decision off the off the three offers that I had. You know, I had three very, very interesting offers at the time. I had West Ham and I had Watford. And I'd had about 3 days after the meeting I had with Mark and with Steve, I had a four-hour meeting with Graham Taylor, which was a brilliant meeting. And he wanted me to sign, desperately wanted me to sign and tried to pull out all the stops to get me to sign. And probably had it not really been for Terry at that time, I probably would have signed at Watford. And I only lived 10, 15 minutes from the ground, but I just had this hunch for Palace. I just had this feeling after I spoke to Terry about it, and Mark was all enthusiastic and what have you, and I just thought, nah, I want to sign for Palace.
What was your first impression of the group of players they had? They had Lombardo, Churchich, Janssen, some experience.
Yeah, we had, you know, at the time we had some really, really good players. Some really good players. I remember Craig Moore. Craig Moore was an exceptional centre-back. Gordon Petrich, good player. And then you had like your Matt Janssens, your Sasses, Attilio, you know. So there was some good players in there. But to be fair, it was... Dressing rooms don't mean a lot to me. They're just people, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I've been in a dressing room with Teddy Sheringham, Darren Addison, Chica Popescu, Jurgen Klinsmann, Nicky Barmby. Do you know what I mean? So it wasn't... It didn't mean too much to me. It always got to me, it's a job, and I'm coming in to do a job. And this is where I've got to try and make a mark. Although it was very difficult in the first sort of 6 months. I was still recovering, really. I hadn't really played football for a year properly, first team, because of my knee. And the last operation, it's not the last operation I had was on the other knee. So I had four operations on the knee that I said to you, finish me on the end of the third year at Spurs. And then in the last year of my contract at Spurs, I severed my cartilage in three in my other knee. So I never played for 7 months. I was out from the July to the following February. So that was a long process. But I've always been mentally strong in that. I was always never ever come into my head that I was not going to play football again. The surgeon told me he was going to do a pioneering operation on my knee where the cartilage was going to be stapled back together, or two parts of it was. He had to take a third of it away, but two parts of it were going to be stapled back together. He'd never done it on a footballer before, so he didn't know if it was going to work, but this is what he was going to try because he didn't want to take the whole thing out. And he said, because if I take the whole thing out in 2 years, you're going to be done. We have to try this to start off with. So I hadn't played for a year when I come to Palace. And although I was fit, I was physically fit, I wasn't game match fit. And there's a big, big difference. Some people can come back, that are naturals that come back from it and go straight in and they're fine. I wasn't one of those players. I needed time, and I needed time to adapt and to get my game fitness, game mentality back. And that was going to take time.
Why do you think it didn't work out under Terry in those first months? Because we were expected to come straight back up, weren't we?
You know, I think that when I look back at that time, there's always different problems. There's always a different set of problems if a team's winning at home and losing away, or losing at home and winning away. And that team couldn't win away from home for love nor money. And for me, it was a lack of character. There was a lack of character in that team. As in, characters with cojones, as we say in Spanish. For me, in my opinion, it was good when it was at home. The fans were behind you and this, that and the other. And even in that period of time, I remember beating Portsmouth 4-1 at home and games like that. But I also remember going to Swindon away and losing 2-0. I wasn't involved in that day, but You know, I remember having a conversation. I remember having a conversation with Terry before the Swindon game, away from home. I remember we lost 2-0. I think it was 2-0. And I was getting pelters from the Palace fans at the time, obviously for different reasons. They didn't know the full story of what had happened. I think they just saw me as Terry's boy. But I was getting pelters, and Terry pulled me before the game and said to me, he said, Dean, he said, oh, like, they're abusing you. Unbelievable. I've got to take you out of the firing line now. I can't let you take that amount of stick. And I said, boss, don't worry about that. Stick me out there. You need characters, and I'm one of them, and stick me out there. And he went, no, because actually I think that the stick that they're giving you is affecting the others. So I think, I know that I've got to do this. Now, whether that was a ploy, an excuse or whatever, I accepted it because of the respect I had for the man. But I did feel that at that point that we had individuals. We had great individuals, but not a great team. But in saying that, the best individual that we did have was also the best team player, which was Attilio. Attilio was he's probably one of the best professionals. There's two professionals that I've played with. I've played with three professionals, people that I've felt that how they conducted themselves, how they prepared themselves. There's three people who I played with that I look back and I think, you know what, you'll do for me. I would have them with me all the time. One was Jürgen Klinsmann. The other one was Attilio Lombardo. And the other one, believe it or not, was Dougie Friedman. Dougie was a character that his preparation and how he prepared himself to get himself in the best condition for that next game was just as good as mentality as what the others had.
And what do you remember about Terry leaving?
Not too much, actually. I don't think I spoke to him personally before. I had a good relationship. I had a very good working relationship with Terry. But when I worked with him, I worked with him. There was no personal relationship. As exactly the same as Steve Coppell. When I worked for them guys, when I was in their environment, in the working environment, it was work only. There was nothing personal. When I didn't work for them, I had a personal relationship with them, as I still do now, because of the respect that I have for them as people, as well as the respect that I have for them as managers. So I didn't really speak to Terry about what was going on. I only remember coming in one day, on the day we went into Godstone, and someone said, like, you know, the gaffer's gone. He's packed his stuff up and gone, and, you know, the club's in big trouble, and, you know, there's a real chance it might go in administration, this, that and the other. And I didn't speak to Terry for about 4 or 5 days. Yeah. He spoke to me after about 4 or 5 days. He sort of said, how are you, blah, 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 this, that and the other. I said, well, don't worry about me. How are you? No, I'm fine. It's the right thing to do. You know, the guy's got himself in a right pickle. And, you know, to give the club a chance, I think it's best that I move on. It is the only thing that can... He can't afford to pay me in this, that and the other, so I think it's best that they move on. So I was right, OK. He then called me, I think, 3-4 days after, and he sort of said, you know, do you know what you want to do? And I sort of said to him, I said, no, I haven't really thought about it. He said, well, you're not playing. You're obviously not going to play in this, that and the other. So I've gone, yeah, OK, I sort of understand that a little bit. But he said, well, Steve's not going to play you. And I sort of said, well, I kind of know that. But, you know, I've always been one who likes a challenge. So I've got to prove to him that I'm worthy of being in part of the group. I just come in and done my job every day. Just come in, worked really hard, didn't moan, didn't gripe. I've never been one to make excuses. Got my head down, worked hard, was on the bench a couple of times. Steve was very honest with me, got a couple of players back from injury, called me in, sort of said, I'm not going to take you to Tranmere, for example, tomorrow. You're only going to be 14th man or 15th man. You're better off staying here. I'll give you the weekend off if you want. He's, you know, I'll give you the weekend off because I trust you. I know that you'll still train. I says, absolutely. And then obviously it went proper pear-shaped coming towards the end of the window, coming towards the end of the transfer window as it was then in sort of March. Terry had run me and sort of said, there's four or five clubs here that are interested in taking you. And I'm kind of like, there was something in me that was just like, I haven't shown people what I'm about here. And I don't think I've had the opportunity to do that. And I don't think I could live with myself if I haven't met the challenge head on and showed people what Dean Austin is about. And I think that's what it was. Plus two of the options were Scotland. And I was like, I didn't fancy either of them. Both were going really well in the Premier League in Scotland. But, you know, it's a pub league, isn't it, really? Without being disrespectful, there's one or two teams up there. And I was just kind of like, wasn't sitting right with me. Then player after player's going over the course of these 2-3 days before the window's closing. I had Mark on the phone to me begging me to go because he couldn't afford to pay me. And I said to him, I said, I'm not going. It's not about the money. You do what you got to do. It's only about the money. So I ended up staying. Steve then pulled me on the Thursday. So the squad's been absolutely decimated. And we were playing Bradford on Sunday. And Steve pulled me on the Thursday morning and said to me, I need you, or I want to involve you, but I'm being told by the administrators and what have you to not pick you because you've got appearance money on your contract that they can't afford to pay. I won't forget it. I'll play. I don't want the money. He sort of said, well, I don't think there's other players here that are still here that are getting appearance money. I don't feel that you shouldn't get anything. I went, I don't care. Just play me. I need to play, and I want to play. And he went, right, okay, you play. And I forget, on the first half an hour, 45 minutes of the game, I got absolutely pelted by the supporters. I'll never forget it. We played Bradford, who got promoted that year. I think we drew 1-1. But I had a good game. Played right wing back. We played five at the back, or 3-5-2. I had an half-decent game, considering that I hadn't played for 4 months. And then really, the next game was Norwich away, and that was it.
Yeah, that Norwich game. Lots of youngsters in the team.
Yeah, I remember... I remember the likes of Clinton, obviously, Hayden, who had opportunities that year, Andrew Frampton, Andy Martin. I remember it well. Or remember the actual... It's too far back. I'm too old now to be able to remember that far back, but yeah.
So that Norwich game, obviously you got the winning goal. That's where we secured safety. So how did you feel then? Was that when the connection with the fans started?
I think so, because after the game, because of the euphoria of the supporters, and we had, you know, we packed the allocation that we had there that day. I just remember going, like, we were clapping the supporters and, you know, walked round and shook a few hands and fans pulling you in and saying to them how much it meant to them that you haven't abandoned the club when the club's in trouble and this, that and the other. I think that was probably, for me, was the turning point, I would say. They are special memories. Not memories necessarily for the right reasons, but they are. You know, I had this conversation with Simon Jordan after we got beat 5-0 by Liverpool in the semi-final of the Carling Cup. And we went back to the hotel and all the boys were laughing and joking and having a drink and they were going out and this, that and the other. And he said, have a drink. And I went, have a drink. I went, I've just seen my last chance probably of ever having the opportunity of playing a cup final probably just disappear in the first 25 minutes of a game. We've just lost 5-0. And you want me to have a drink? Well, I'm going to bed. And he couldn't believe it. But I think then that for him, in that first year, was that he saw what I was about as a character. And at the end of the day, I was a winner, and I still am. I might want to win in a certain style now as a coach, but I want to win as much as what I wanted to win when I played. I play the kids at cards when I'm at home now and I have to win. I play table tennis in the garage and I have to win. If I don't, I throw the racket all over the place and what have you. That's just the way I am. But I think, you know, from his point of view, Simon saw kind of what I was a little bit about. Then I think, really, I think he probably knew what I was about, but from that point, he really knew what I was about as in regards to the type of character that I was, and that I was a solid character, a reliable character. But, as I say, that was my character. I don't think the people saw the best of me in my ability at Crystal Palace. I don't think they did at Tottenham, apart from the first and the third year. My career was littered by injuries, and there's nothing you can do about that.
So you went from under Steve, from him not going to be playing you, to being named club captain over the summer. What do you think, what changed?
I remember one game. I don't know what one it was, and I don't know what programme it was, but probably one of the nicest things that a manager has ever written about me was written his notes. And Steve wrote along the lines of, with everything that's been going on at this football club and the way players have been dealt with and this, that and the other, if there was one person who would have anything to moan about, it would be Dean Austin. And he basically said that I was one of the best professionals that he'd ever worked with. Never moans, never gripes, comes in, gets on with it, demands the high standards, pushes people, makes people want to be better, wants to improve himself. And that was one of the nicest things that anyone had ever written about me, a manager had ever written about me. And actually, when he went to Brighton, he tried to get me to sign for Brighton. But I was never going to sign for Brighton. Well, I think it's one of two things. I think had he dangled enough money in front of me, maybe I would have done it. But I had this thing. I just had this thing in my head. And I was just like, I've got this great relationship with Palace fans. I don't think they'll ever forgive me. I'd left anyway. And I left under Trevor. And I instigated that myself. It was a time when I wasn't playing. Trevor didn't want to play me. He wanted to use me when he wanted to use me. And I didn't like being used in that way. I had a really good relationship with him off the field as a person, but I had a very, very bad relationship with him as a manager. And I did speak out against him openly, which I regret. But I didn't say anything outside that I hadn't already said to his face.
You talked about the dressing rooms being really good from 1999 onwards. What was the reason for that? I mean, we should have gone down that next year because we were in administration for the whole season.
Yeah.
But we had the young players like Morrison, Hayden Mullins coming through.
As a person, it was an unbelievable experience for me. I think there was only, Fraser Digby in goal, me, Andy Linegan and probably Craig Foster come back after about 3 months of that year, done his cruciate, I believe, earlier. And I was 29, 30, Andy was 34, 35, Fraser was 30, 31, Fozzie was 30. And Copps was brilliant. Steve just sort of said to me, listen, Steve's not a man of many words anyway. You know, it's not how he manages. You know, he's brilliant at what he does, but he's not a man of loads and loads of words. And he sort of said to me, you sort the dressing room out and you get these boys going on a week to week, on a sort of Monday to Thursday, And then on a Thursday, I'll come in, and then that's when I'll do my bit and what have you. But literally, you run it. You literally run it. You're the leader of the team. Jolly was there as well. But literally, you run it, and that's how it worked. And we just had a camaraderie. You know, I felt it was an obligation to look after the young boys. I felt it was an obligation, yeah, to push them, but to also to help them, to not hammer them, but to push them, to get them to strive, to want to be better. And I thrived off it.
And you had that season, young Ashley Cole coming on loan.
Unbelievable story with Ash, got to tell you. Because I think at that, the end of that year, I think we signed Tommy Black and Julian Gray at the end of that year. But Steve sort of said, like, we need a left back, blah, blah, we're going to sign this young boy from Arsenal. He's only 18, 19 years old. I've gone, right, okay. A lot of the time you would think when you're at a club like what we were at, in the position that we're at, where you're thinking, you know, if you've got a player coming from one of those big, sort of big four clubs, you're kind of thinking, you know, we're going to get some young prima donna here who's going to think he's a bit above it. And, you know, we had a great atmosphere. And my concern was that if we had the wrong character, whether I'd have to slap him down a bit, if to want a phrase. Ash come in, I'll never forget this, because Ash come in on a Thursday, and quiet lad, shy, this, that and the other, when he was introduced, he knew Clint and Hayden, he knew them from the circuit anyway, because all these young boys now, they all know each other. But really, really lovely kid, but really shy, and really timid, and I thought, oof. Going to be interesting as to watch him, to see how he fares. We were playing away to Grimsby on Saturday. He come in and trained, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure about this one. I'm not quite sure. He looked a little bit in awe of it, and anyway, trained. And as a youngster coming in, the 2 days before the game, and he's playing on Saturday, Steve's told me he's playing Saturday. And I watched this kid train for 2 days, and I'm thinking, we could be in trouble here. If they try and target him and exploit him, he could be in trouble. And we went to Grimsby, and I kid you not, this kid was head and shoulders above anything else on the field. I couldn't believe it. After the 2 days I'd seen in training, to what he did in that day, it was incredible. He was absolutely superb, and he just got better and better and better. And I remember writing in the captain's notes in one of the programmes that I said that this boy is at a level that he could be anything. And unless something drastically goes wrong inside 3 years, he will play for England. And he played for England inside 9 months. But he was a great lad. And he was just what we needed, and he was a great lad and a great player, as his career has shown him to be.
When did you make the move from fullback to centre half?
By accident. When I was at Tottenham, the plan with Terry had told me that the plan was the following year to switch to three centre backs. So we played 4-4-2, but Terry was always thinking of different ideas, as he showed when he went with England, and then obviously what he did with England, and then Glenn overtook that with England. But that was Terry's thing. So his feeling at that time was that he was going to change to be able to play three centre-backs. Maybe not every game, but that was where he felt that I would play. So when he signed me for Crystal Palace, and he knew that the group of players that he had, because he wanted to accommodate a Churchich, who was a free spirit, you would have to basically sacrifice something in your team defensively with Sasser in the team, because he had that much ability. And I had this conversation with Terry. I had long, long conversations about how you can accommodate a maverick, so to speak, in your team. So he said to me when we was going to the Palace, he said, "I'm going to play three centre backs, and you'll play right side of the three. I've got Čurčić, but I can't get him to do the work defensively. But he's sublime on the ball, Dean. So we've got to find a way." And that was how it came about. So that was when I ended up playing right side of three. And then when Steve took over, Steve stayed with the three originally. And then it was just a progression. And then a progression that the following year we went to four, playing a four at the back. And I just ended up going inside because I was the voice. I was the organiser with the team. The legs had gone. I used to play probably 70% of the game with my head rather than the legs.
And then Steve left when Simon Jordan came in as owner. Did you agree with that decision?
I wouldn't say I agreed with it. You know, I don't think that you... I think that if you're talking about characters and the flamboyancy of Simon and the character of Steve, you're not going to put them two together. They're so chalk and cheese. Simon had his views and Steve had his views. So Steve knew immediately when he met Simon that it wasn't going to work. And then obviously, you know, we were preparing for pre-season. We'd come out of administration at the sort of just towards the beginning of the pre-season. I mean, I was 2 days away from signing for Sheffield United. I'd gone and met Neil Warnock and everything, and everything was agreed. But I didn't want to go. I just didn't. It wasn't rocking my boat. But I was also aware that Palace were days away from going out of business. Anyway, Steve rang me near on. I was probably 2 days. I had Neil on the phone to me probably every 2 days. When are you coming to sign? When are you coming to sign? I didn't get off with the best foot with them because I ended up having an argument with the Sheffield United chairman, who sort of said to me, you know, along the lines of, we don't really want to sign you, but he wants you, and on his head be it, and we're paying you a lot of money. He said, like, this is a lot of cash for us, this is a big signing, and this is a big club. And I turned around to him and went, this ain't a lot of money. And this is not a big club in the terms of the clubs that I've played for. And if I do come here, I'm coming here for him. I won't be coming here for you. And Neil loved that. He loved me saying that. But then Steve called me and sort of said, a deal's going to be done, blah, blah, blah. And not, we need to try and sort a contract. I went into Simon. He made me a very, very bad offer. But we had a gentleman's agreement. We had a gentleman's agreement that if I performed, then he would rip my contract up at the end of year one and give me another contract. So I held him to that at the end of that year. The team had a crap season, but on a personal basis, a season that started really badly for me under Alan Smith, being removed as captain without even being told, I felt disrespected. I felt I deserved better. And then after about 10 games, I played the first game and never played for about 6-7 games. And then we played away at Birmingham. We played away at Birmingham. I think we drew 3-3 or lost 3-2. Razor had got injured. Razor had replaced me as captain. I'd been kiboshed out of it by Alan. Wasn't told that I was removed as captain or anything like that. And that really disappointed me. It's not how I work. I just felt that anyone as a human being deserved more respect than that. Anyway, we played away at Birmingham. And we drew 3-3, and I played really well. Played left centre half in a four. Razor was injured. And I'd cracked a rib in the game without really realising at the time until the following day. You know, that one when you can't catch your breath as soon as you go to breathe. And I thought, well, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble here. But I thought, I'm not giving Alan Smith the satisfaction of dropping me on Wednesday. We're playing away to Fulham, and I'm not giving him the satisfaction of dropping me for Wednesday's game. So I went out and trained on the Monday, and I was like, I was in absolute agony. At like how I got through training for 2 days, I don't know how I did it, but I did, because I weren't giving him that. I knew what he was going to do, but I wanted him to have to face me to tell me what he was doing. Anyway, he did, he dropped me, never told me. Went to the hotel on the Wednesday lunchtime when we went for pre-match, and then the boys used to sleep. Ray Houghton spoke to me and sort of said, has he spoke to you? No. He went, mate, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Went to the game, I was on the bench. And then the following day, I've said to the physio, I said, listen, I've got to get an x-ray. I said, I've done something. I think I've cracked a rib. Went and had the x-ray. Yeah, cracked rib. How long? Don't know. It's just got to heal. Team were losing. And I think this was, when I come back, it was after probably about 3.5-4 weeks after. I mean, we played away at Bolton and we drew 3-3. I think we was either 3-1 down. I think we was 3-1 down in the second half and come back and drew 3-3. And Dougie, it was his first game and he scored and this, that and the other. And I played really well. And that was it. I had no explanation, nothing. I was back in the team. Within a month of being back in the team, I come into the dressing room for an evening game, and the captain's armband was on top of my shirt. So I said to Victor, I says, "Hey Vic, what's going on?" He went, "Don't know, mate. I've just been told to put it on your peg, your skipper, back skipper." I went, "All right, no problem." It didn't mean it. Listen, I was obviously proud to captain the club, but why I got it taken away and then got it put back without even an explanation of either or was kind of baffling to me.
So there's no explanation of why Razor got the captaincy, because he, at that point, he wasn't the best of, as an example of a professional, was he?
Yeah, you know, I played with Razor in 1992. And I watched him have the best year of his life, footballing-wise, at Tottenham Hotspur. He cleaned up the whole lot. That year, he was unbelievable. The best centre-half I've ever played with. But we had a thing at Tottenham that Terry was very, very, very set in his ways, that he would give you a weight that you had to be playing at. Unless you was like me, I only weighed 10.5 stone in them days, so I was wafer. But Neil was always a big lad, so he was given a weight, and he was told what weight he had to be to play. And he was told, if you're not under that weight on a Friday when you tip the scales, mate, you won't play. And Neil was like that. He was lean. He probably would have been about 90 kilos. When he came to Palace, he was over 100. The first game, that game that we played the day when Steve left, which was, we got beat by Millwall in that friendly. Neil couldn't play because they didn't have a pair of shorts that were big enough to fit. Which is funny when you look back at it, but, you know, it's not funny because you're going to Millwall and you know, even though it's a pre-season friendly. But he was the best centre-half that I'd ever played with. Ever. But at that time, listen, I knew he had his problems. I used to drive in with him most days. I used to meet him at Brentwood and we used to drive in. So I kind of knew that he had his problems, but Razor was a larger than life character. He was a great lad. As you say, probably not the best example to young lads that are coming through, but as a character to have around, there was never a dull minute. So he was very good. But he and I were talking. He and I never once in the car, because he had a nickname for me from back in the Spurs days. But we never once spoke about the captaincy. Never once. We were mates, we were muckers, and even though I was got moved to centre half then, he and I never once spoke about him playing or me playing or whether he was gone. There's only one time that I know that Neil was distraught, and that was the semi-final away at Liverpool, when Alan made the bizarre decision to not pick him and play Jamie Smith centre off and Wayne Carlisle at right back.
Wayne Carlisle got destroyed that game, didn't he?
Yeah. But it was almost the 2 weeks from the first leg to the second leg, and we knew we had injuries and this, that and the other. It was almost that Razor had come alive again because he was going back to Liverpool. And it was almost like he was just up for the game, he's up for the game. And I know him as a person, and I know that really, really got to him.
What do you think we could have done better in that game?
Well, 100%, because if you pick the right team, then you might be able to give half a decent account of yourself. But, you know, sometimes with young players, to play young players in games when, you know, to throw them in is one thing, you know, when they've got no experience. But this group had a little bit of experience through playing in administration. So it then become dangerous. Probably 20, 25 games. They've been to some big stadiums and played, but they've never played at a place like Anfield in front of 45,000. And I just watch. I remember before the game, the boys even forgot to do the huddle before the game. I mean, what I had the boys, the way I got to the boys in that time was I created the huddle. And Simon Jordan brought it up to me in the hotel afterwards. He said they absolutely made a mess in their pants tonight, didn't they? He said they even forgot to do the huddle, didn't they? They just crumbled. The occasion was too big. I think they was already thinking about the end goal before doing the bit of the second half, which was the second half. We won the first game. But that was a cauldron, and I've been there, and I've got a good record at Anfield as a player at Tottenham. I only lost there once, I think four times. I won there three times, twice or three times. So I knew what it was like to be in that atmosphere, but I had the experience to be able to handle it. These boys didn't have the experience to handle it on that night, and having a Razor on the pitch, who was a big game player. Was a massive miss. It was a massive, massive call to make. So I can't actually remember the team that we had, but I just remember, well, the game was over, I think, within 25 minutes. I think it was 3 or 4-0, wasn't it, after 25 minutes. But probably the most disappointing day of my Palace career, I'd say.
And then still that season, obviously, Alan Smith lost his job. That game against Stockport. They needed you then. That was bandaged up head.
Yeah, I think that I never really thought about the lead up to the game. I never even thought after we lost to Wolves at home and Alan was removed. I never thought with two games to go. I never ever thought we're getting relegated. It never ever entered my head that we'd get relegated. For me, it was like, we go to Portsmouth on Wednesday and we win, or Tuesday night and we win. We're going to go there and we're going to win. That's what we're going to do. And we went there and obviously we won. Probably as good as a performance that we had had that year, but we won. The mood just changed. It was like kind of, not through the fault of Alan, I just think that the pressure built and built and built over a period of time. I remember playing away to Burnley in the February, I think it was after we got beat by Liverpool in the semi-final. I think we went to Burnley and won 1-0. I think we was 11th in the league at the time. And we went after that, I think with 10 games, we didn't win a game. And then by after them 10 games, we're in trouble. I just feel that we'd got, that it was, everyone was in a rut. We was in a rut, and it was just kind of like, it was a rut that no one could get out of. And no matter what we did, or no matter how hard we tried, it just wasn't happening. But I just think that when Steve Kemba and Terry Bullivant took over, just sort of coming on the Monday, and it was just like a little bit more jovial and a little bit of, it was almost like a bit of banter, and it was almost like kind of Dad resigned himself that we were going down. But I'd never ever thought about that. I don't have negative thoughts when I go into a game. I have to be focused and look at, even like now when I coach and I've managed in all the teams that I've been at, and my focus is always about the positives and about winning.
Why do you think the Palace fans see you as such a hero?
I think because at a time when everyone was abandoning the club, in a time when a club was on its backside, I was almost like the sole survivor. And I think that was really what it come down to. Because to be honest with you, in the first year, they thought I was crap. And to be fair, I was crap at that time. My body was in turmoil. I was trying to find the experience of being able to manage my body with the problems that I had. I was, in the last 2 years, was incredible. I was popping tablets like there was no one's business. Like that. They were like Smarties. And for me to be able to recover in between games, to be able to get myself out on the field, not only through my knee, but through my toe. Now, people don't understand, but then in my third year at Tottenham, I broke my toe. I cracked my toe. Like fractured it in two places. I kicked the bottom of someone's boot, but we were flying at Tottenham at the time. We were flying under Gerry Francis, and we was in the semi-final of the FA Cup and what have you, and I weren't going to miss nothing. So I was having 3 injections a game into my toe for about 12 games. Well, of course, when you're injecting into a bone, it then becomes arthritic. So I have arthritis. I had arthritis in my toe, but I didn't have it. It only occurred or really set in when I was playing at the Palace, and I think a year and a half before I finished, I kicked the bottom of someone's boot again and it flared it. And I was getting injections to play, not every week, but once a month. I was going to my surgeon, the surgeon that had looked after me when I was at Tottenham, who'd only done 2 of my knee operations, but to recover the damage that someone else had done before. And he said to me, I can't keep injecting this. You're going to have the operation, and the operation will keep you out for 6-9 months. And I went, I haven't got 6-9 months. I'm 32 years old. So I just think from the Palace's fans' point of view, I think that they just thought I was someone. I was a leader. I was a character. I had balls, and I didn't leave them. I didn't leave the club when the club was on its backside. I don't mean that they... that I don't think I'm any kind of cult hero because of what I was as a player. I think it was more because of what I was as a character.
And the other way around, what do you love about Palace as a club and fans?
I love the closeness of it. I love the relationship. I'm a people's person and I'm a team player. There's no I in we, and I like feeling that. I like feeling part of something. And I just look at Palace, it's special in that way. And I just, you know, I just had a real, real bond with the fans after probably 9 months. It was just kind of like they understood me and I now understood them. And I was playing for this. And that was what made it special for me.
And you returned to the club?
Yeah.
A few years later, coaching role.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I'd obviously been assistant manager to Brendan at Watford and Reading. Our situation at Reading wasn't great. Our contracts were terminated the January, I think it was. I took some time out. And I remember I was in Marbella and Dougie called me and was coming in, or had a chance going as assistant under Paul Hart. The club of Warnock had left and club again in administration again. And he sort of said to me, because I'd signed Dougie at Southend. So he said to me, what do you think? And I sort of said, well, you're at that age now where you're looking to wind it down. If you're looking to go down this road, coach, managing, then take the punt. So he went, right, okay. So he said, well, I'm going to take the punt. So he took the punt. Dougie and I have always been in contact. I know, look, there was a big halloo made of when I left, when he got rid of me. But it needed to happen. It was the right thing. I was in a bad place at that time. I'd lost my mum 4 or 5 months earlier. And, you know, Dougie and I have had long conversations about it since. We never spoke for about a year, but that was more through me, more than through him, because I felt hurt, because he's my friend. But it was the right thing at the right time. It was the right thing to happen. But he asked me, would I come in? It was sort of all hands to the pump, really. He wanted me to sort of be kind of work with him and George, or work with him and whoever the manager was going to be. And it didn't. There was names at the time, George Burley, Chris Coleman, whoever it was going to be. But would I come in and do that role, sort of first team coach and young players? Because Dougie knew what I was about as a coach, but also to start setting up a scouting kind of structure as well, because they had nothing. There was nothing. I mean, the first day I walked in there and I worked in the office and I was like, right, so where's our database for players? And, oh, well, I ain't got any. What do you mean? Well, we ain't got a computer system. No, obviously, it's computer, but we haven't got anything on computer. Nothing. Neil didn't do anything on computers. It was paper reports. All right, well, where are they all gone? Oh, they've all been shredded. There was nothing. So the first thing that, so really in trying to do all the things I'd done, I spoke to Steve and there wasn't a lot of money there. I sort of said to Steve, you know, you need to get Scout 7. Then we need to set a database up. I need to get a couple of scouts in, get one in the north, one in the south. This was what we was doing. He says, right, go ahead. Literally no money. And then I put a presentation. So I was doing the coaching and what have you. And then I put a presentation together for Steve as in regards to regionalising the scouting. I put 5 regions in the UK. I said, this is the way forward, or the next step. And he went, well, how much will it cost? This was towards the end of the season. I said, it will cost you this. And he went, right, let's do it. How long will it take to implement? I went, not long. So that was that. And then obviously I had the younger players that I was working with at that time. Had a good year with them, to be fair. After, you know, I always feel like when I'm coaching, when I'm developing players, I like to take players out of the comfort zone. And I've definitely done that with this group. Because the first game I took them, we played away at Spurs and we got beat 8-0. And we were 5-0 down after 25 minutes, half an hour. But you learn about people. I mean, that really, really hurt me, to be honest with you. And they knew that it hurt me, going back to my other old club. But, you know, I saw something in the group. I had sort of a core about 9 or 10. And I just saw something in this group. They were working really well and we worked phenomenally hard in training. I mean, I do work players very, very hard, but I try and develop them. And these boys kept going, when are we going back? We want to go back. Because I pulled us out of the league that we was in, which was the capital against the Crawleys and Aldershots and Wimbledon. I said, this is no good. For where we want to go with Palace, this is no good. They need tests. We need to go to Tottenham. We need to go to QPR. We're in the Premier League, West Ham. And so we started going to these places. We created our, well, we set our own games and we used to go out. So we played Tottenham. We played Tottenham in that year 4 times in that year. We lost 8-0. We went back in, that was in the August or the September. Yeah, the August. We went back in the September and lost 5-2. We went back in the January and lost 3-1. And the boys kept going, when are we going back? They kept saying to me, when are we going back? When are we going back? And I'm, you know, I admired their spirit They were great lads. There were some great young lads in there. And that, listen, you're not all going to get every single young player that you're going to get through at Crystal Palace. But if you can get one, or you can get two, and you can get others' careers at other places, you've done your job. But they kept going on. It was my second last game, because we loaned all the players out. I said to Dougie, all these players need to go out on loan. We loaned them all out, and we beat them 1-0, Spurs. And I gave the boys a lot of player ownership. I used to let them do their own set pieces. They used to bring them to me, and then I used to get them sorted out for them. And they won it off a set piece. It was unbelievable. It was like they won the World Cup. It was brilliant. And I'll always remember that. Good memories.
What about working with Wilfred Zaha then?
Wilf is the most talented player that I've ever coached. But he's uncoachable. The things that I did, it was no good talking to Wilf. Wilf is unorthodox. Wilf is just different. You know, you don't, players like that have that ability, you don't coach them. Because you end up coaching it out of them. So you have to let them play. Me personally, you know, Wilf started off as a 10 really in the first year that he played, and then Dougie switched him wide. For me, he'll end up being a second striker. I know he's been playing more central, seen him more central at times now, but that's where, for me, he could play. For me, it'll be 7, 11, or 9, or 10. He can play in any of those, because as he matures, he's understanding the game more. You know, he's a maverick, Wilf. He's a free spirit when he's on the ball. He does things with the ball that you and I can only ever dream about doing. But he's a grafter and he's a winner. And those players will always find themselves to greatness. Now, Wilf had influences in his life when he was younger that you would think, oh, he could go one way or another. Without, you know, you're hearing some of the things about him and you think, but he's knuckled down. He's been advised well, you know. And the sky's the limit for the kid, really.
Dean Austin there. And you can watch cult heroes films on him, Aki Rialati, Michael Hughes, Matt Janssen, Sasha Churchich and Fan ZE on the club's YouTube channel. Just search CPFC. We'll be back next week with a regular pod ahead of a return to Premier League action at Huddersfield Town. Adios.